Thanks to Amazon Pharmacy for supporting The Instance. Amazon Pharmacy makes it easy to order your prescriptions and have them delivered straight to your door. Amazon Prime members can save on prescription medication when not using insurance, with medication as low as $1 a month plus free two-day delivery. Learn more at amazon.com/wowrx.
Tell me, have you witnessed their power?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Instance. This is The Instance, episode 643 for Friday, July 16th, 2021. I'm Scott Johnson. We fired Garrett. He's out of here. Just kidding. He's on vacation and having a great time, as best I can tell. He's gone for the next two Fridays, today and next Friday. Don't worry, though. We have guests sitting in for the great Garrett Weinzierl this week. We have Alex Albisu, a podcaster and friend of the program. Alex, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Scott. So happy to be here. And hello, chat.
Hello. Hey, it's good to have you here. You're also, you're not in charge of the Filthy Casuals. You're just on that team, right? That raid team?
I'm in charge of the Filthy Casuals.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so What we have here is a raid leader of current WoW content to take me down from my high horse on a few WoW issues this week, because he's having as much fun as anybody right now, right? You're having a good time.
As much fun as one can in the current tumultuous state that is World of Warcraft and Blizzard, certainly, but we're having a great time. And we have some fellow Frog Pants folks and ANTP folks in there, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, that's awesome.
We're enjoying it.
Yeah, that's great. Also, a runner up in the America's Next Top Podcaster elimination mode thing that went down a couple years ago, or a year ago, was it? How long ago?
Yeah, gosh, it feels like 50 years ago with everything that's been going on. But yeah, it's great. I just went the whole way and didn't win.
Yeah.
You know, no big deal.
Yeah.
Scott constantly complained about my voice the whole time.
Well, look, I was a judge. You're supposed to judge. And I don't even remember where it all started, where the voice thing came from. I honestly don't remember.
I think it had something to do with like you kept talking about like, wow, Gidget, your voice is great. Amy, your voice is great. Jerry, your voice is great. And then left it like that. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, please, Scott, mention me.
So it was an omission, not necessarily. I wasn't calling you out. I just wasn't saying anything. I see.
It's quite okay.
I see how
it went. It's quite okay.
Well, all right. It's good to have you here. We got a bunch to get into today. And as I mentioned in the last episode, some changes are happening to the show. This week will be reflective of some of that, but we're not done. That's the other thing to remember. A lot of people are like, well, when is it going to be overnight sort of change? Not really. It'll be incremental. It'll take a little bit of time. Also, you know, Garrett not being here, some of that stuff has to happen with the both of us as regular hosts. But today will be a little bit different, and some of it may be a little the same. I don't know. You're going to have to judge for yourselves as we dive in right now. All right. A couple things top of the show here. You might actually finally get to play WoW on a handheld after all. In fact, you might be able to play all your favorite MMOs or any games you want on a handheld, not because suddenly Nintendo has opened the gates wide open for you, but because Steam finally announced, or Valve rather, finally announced their Steam Deck, not to be confused with Elgato's Stream Deck, which literally had an update announced the same day.
That's why I was so confused.
It's really unfortunate for them, mostly because clearly the news cycle is on the side of Valve here in terms of interest. But Valve announced a handheld gaming device, and it's a lot like the Switch in terms of format. We're talking about a 7-inch screen, basically 720p handheld output, although if you connect it to a TV, you get higher, or a screen, you can use a regular monitor or whatever. Anyway, I'm not going to get too much into this as a gaming device. The short of it is your entire Steam library is immediately available to you. There's a thin translation layer on this Linux-based OS that will let you play Windows games that way. But you can also install Windows. You could run the Epic Game Store here. You could install the WoW launcher. You could run Final Fantasy XIV. Whatever you want to do on this thing, it seems they are letting you do that. And today it went on sale for prices starting at $399 all the way up to almost $700 for the high-end model. And I wonder how we feel about the idea that these MMOs we love so much, we might soon play on a handheld. Weird, right?
Well, we we get there are a bunch of add-ons out there that let you use a like an Xbox controller with World of Warcraft, and I see a lot of people streaming on like Facebook and other places where they do that, and they're doing it rather successfully. And I know a lot of people who prefer playing with a controller for some reason, just games in general, not necessarily World of Warcraft. So I love what it provides for the Steam library and that entire ecosystem. I think that it's really funny, especially that Epic, like, yeah, technically you could their biggest competitor, you can install that there. I think that's really cool. But yeah. I personally like my freedom with a keyboard and a mouse playing a game like World of Warcraft. I don't think I could see myself doing that, but like talking to other folks in my community, like, and Bobby Franks, who's in chat, that's Bobby Frankenberger, who everybody knows. Mm. He's my co-lead. He wanted me to clarify of the Filthy Casuals team. He's very excited for it. And so, yeah, maybe we'll have him test it. I'm going to force him to test it.
Yeah, we talked a ton about this thing in detail on Core, but good news, if you want to play, let's say, World of Warcraft on it, you can easily hook a computer, a keyboard and a mouse up to it. If you don't want to go the controller route, we don't even know if the controller will do anything without a bunch of hoop jumping, which you have to do now to make like an Xbox One controller work. So there's probably still those barriers. This is really just a PC. So
yeah,
the way you need to look at it is, hey, will this PC run my thing? And if it does, what other stuff do I already have to do to make it run? And in this case, keyboard and mouse are pretty much required. But if you're playing like Final Fantasy 14, that game already supports controller out of the box. It will just recognize it and use it as if you were wired in or Bluetoothed in otherwise to your PC. I think that game in particular will benefit from this because a lot of people play that game with a controller. It's available on PlayStation 5, which is obviously, you know, default controller is your way of playing it there. And I think I could see that being kind of a weird niche for this because people want, I mean, I don't know how much I would do it after the first time, after the gimmick wears off, but I wouldn't mind sitting in bed playing an MMO on a freaking handheld. That sounds all right. That sounds like a nice way to wheedle away the hours of the night. And I'm not hunched over some desk while I'm doing it. I'm hurting my neck in a whole different kind of way.
A whole different type of way. Yeah. You got to go to a chiropractor either way, but that way you're at least laying down for it.
Yeah. And I think they sold out, by the way. So the current status on this thing, I tried to get in there and reserve one. It was busted. The whole experience was broken for me.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah. It was bad. I tried. I was mobile though, which is kind of a problem. I was out and around this morning and couldn't be at a desktop. That may have helped. Just, I don't know, given I could do it through the Steam client, maybe that would have been better luck. I don't know. But it should have worked through either their app or the mobile web, which I used both of those and both just kept throwing errors. And there were timeouts and server overload stuff and all that. Again, not that shocking. A little bit of a bummer that it's part of the store that also needs to run just for everybody else's Steam needs. And so other people just trying to get in there and buy a thing. I heard from somebody who was just trying to get Baldur's Gate 3. I don't know why they decided to get it now, but they tried to get it this morning and reported that they couldn't buy the game.
Well, I was actually just in Steam buying a game that we're going to talk about primarily on this show. I was actually stalled several times and thinking to myself, why am I having so much trouble buying this game? And yeah, it's true. I guess it's because probably everybody and their mother's trying to buy this new Steam Deck. So yeah,
it's pretty nuts. Yeah. I actually like the game name. We had a big argument on Core about the name, but I think I prefer the name over, you know, I don't know. The alternatives are boring to me.
Yeah.
I don't know what else you'd call it. Solid
idea.
Steam screen. Steam thing. I don't know.
The steaming screamer.
The Cleveland steamer. Whoops, that's something totally different. Never mind. Totally forget I said it.
Yep.
Also, there was a giant leak in the WoW community. Well, supposedly leaked. We don't know if this is true or not. And we're probably not going to be able to find out anytime soon because Blizzard doesn't comment on this kind of stuff. But it showed up on Reddit and as basically image captures of what appears to be a leaked series of internal memos that are pretty concerning if they're real. That's the problem, is there's really no way to 100% confirm any of this. It might be worth your time if you're interested in what might be a real inside look at how the state of WoW is and how people on the team are feeling about it, how people internally at Blizzard are feeling about it, and the sort of state of things at Blizzard in general. I'm not going to cast judgments one direction or the other. It's just maybe worth your time to go check it out. However, what really caught me on this, or made this much more interesting, and that's, you know, again, whether or not it's real has yet to be determined. But if you follow the Twitter account of Grums, he's a former BlizzDev from World of Warcraft. He worked on StarCraft 1 and 2, I want to say. A bunch of other stuff there at the company. He's no longer there and hasn't been for quite a while, and has a bit of a following on Twitter for being a little on the critical of his former employee. It's kind of his thing a little bit. But it's a really interesting thread. He basically points out the leak and then goes into these really interesting details about AAA development versus small companies with visions, and when things like that change. Like, when do you go from a small, you know, super flexible company who is just there to make rad games, and it's not really about the money or shareholders or anything else at that point. It's just, hey, what would we want to play, and let's play it. And everybody here, top to bottom, is a gamer, all the way down to the receptionist. And, you know, those ideals, those concepts that we associate with Blizzard and some other folks. He goes into a big, long, pretty interesting thread about why game companies, not just Blizzard, but many others, face certain challenges. And some of those challenges come in the form of, you know, like, here, I'm going to read one of these. This is actually really cool. Let me pull that over here. So he says, how do we get here? He says, a couple of things happen in AAA development that lead us up to this point. The biggest thing is the money. Once AAA games got, or gaming gets bigger than all media, which it is currently, by the way, you start to attract a lot of executives who are in it for the immense profit versus the love of making games. This chain starts at the top, and it's made worse by game companies going public. Hard to argue with much of that. Anyway, he says it starts to flow down into middle management, where you're starting to see serious cash. The why of company changes. Instead of going for games that they would love to play and identifying as gamers themselves, there's now a sense of the other, in quotes. We made the games, they pay for them kind of attitude. That's, you know, what he's claiming. Mm-hmm. He says the original Blizzard culture used to be, we are gamers right down to the receptionist, and we make games for ourselves because we are gamers. He says, I believe this is gone now, and the devs at many AAA studios are distinctly us versus them, quote unquote, the whiny entitled gamers. That's just a taste, and it doesn't feel so much like it's, I mean, obviously Blizzard's a part of the conversation, you can't avoid it, but it feels like a broader conversation about the AAA environment in general and how that sausage is made. And I found it to be a really interesting thread. So if you got a minute, go check out Grums on Twitter, Grumms, and you'll find that thread. It's a long one. It's like, I don't know, 30 posts, 40 posts, something like that.
Yeah. And something that's really interesting, and we talked about this a bunch on Joystick and Mouse, but it's like that, you know, the economics of gaming these days. Mm-hmm. And they try to really, the part that really stuck with me was how they are putting forth that 6-month subscription and the bonuses and everything that you get there so that they can hold on to that commitment from their customers and report out, or their consumers, as they said in quotes, and they could report out for stockholders and everything else what great numbers and everything a company like, or a game like World of Warcraft has. You know, one reality is just they're in that 6-month cycle. So yeah, there's still subscription numbers, but it doesn't necessarily take into account, you know, churn or anything like that. So I thought that the economics piece of that just kind of reaffirmed some of the stuff that we've talked about and kind of just anticipated in general around that. But it is a very interesting perspective, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. He also gets into streaming culture and how that's a thing that devs hate. They love and hate, because they need it to compete, survive, be noticed, whatever. Whether you're a new company, old company, or anything in between, you have to leverage your PR around not just the end user, not just you know, advertising in traditional senses, but you have to be ready for the streaming side of things. And he gets into that a little bit here. When content creators, he uses this as an example because a bunch of them started streaming other than WoW content, specifically Final Fantasy 14, in the last couple of weeks. And when they started talking about it and starting to stream it, you know, that starts to have this like, whoa, wait a minute, what's my favorite content creator doing? They're going over here to do this other thing. Well, what's that about? And then they start going over there. And the way he put it here is, you know, what's a WoW gamer to think? The rest is history. The king is dethroned, an expression of shock on his face. Sometimes you don't need the best product. You need to be good enough to take advantage of a company that has rested too long on their brand and monopoly to actually change, innovate, and improve. He believes that this exodus is a permanent one. A lot of these players are like, yeah, I'm out of here. I'm going to go do other stuff. And it's only being confirmed for them. You know, their bias about leaving is being confirmed by those they hold in high regard, be they streamers, YouTubers, or whatever.
Yeah, this whole kerfuffle with Asmongold and such was like,
it's a big deal.
Big deal.
Yeah, and he has an army, dude. He has an army.
Yeah. So, and it's an opportunity. I mean, like, the way I see it is that it's an opportunity for Blizzard to either come back around and say, like, yeah, here we're going to kind of turn the ship and perhaps earn the trust of our consumers again. Or frankly, it's an opportunity for others, like other MMOs, like something that we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. But there's either way, like, there's a lot of opportunity for us as consumers and gamers around this. So, I'm excited to kind of see what's like stir up this kind of causes in the industry and MMOs in large. I think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. This is it's an interesting time. Like, I've tried to look at it this way the entire time. It's easy to get really negative and down on it. One of my favorite video games of all time, the game that I owe more to in my own personal cultural way than any game I've ever played. World of Warcraft is a singular point of light in my life and has been for a very long time.
Yeah.
So it's easy to go, wow, let's get negative about it, or let's get positive about it, or let's get whatever you want to get about it. I understand how that it can be emotionally tumultuous. I know that we all invest a lot in certain games, and in this case, World of Warcraft, to the point that we feel invested very much personally in its success or its failure or anything else.
Dude, it's like 15, how many years? Like 15 years of
17
my life.
Years, I think, now. Like, yeah. Yeah. And I've been playing since Friends and Family Alpha. Like, it's a long time.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, I have chosen to look at it from a more of a top-down sort of view. I'm very interested in what this means across the industry for Blizzard, but for everyone else. Like, what does this mean when they shed a bunch of players? And it's a meaningful shedding of players. Like, they haven't had to deal with that before. They've always, you know, no matter what, somebody else came out with their new MMO. Hey, it's Star Wars MMO. WoW's fine. Hey, Elder Scrolls, don't worry. WoW's okay. Guild Wars 2, it's very good, I hear. That's okay, because WoW will be fine. Like, that's kept that way for a very long time. I'm not sure it's going to be like that anymore for them. And so it would be easy for me to go, oh, they've lost their edge. There's plenty of those voices. You can go find those voices. My voice on this whole thing is interesting. Let's see where this goes, and let's try to follow it, and, you know, we'll see. So that that thing caused a big old stink. There's a couple other things I want to mention real quick for fans of a couple other games. Final Fantasy 14, they have an official cookbook coming out in November. Let me read you this quote, and don't you dare tell me you're not getting this, because you know you're going to go out and buy this.
I'm so into this.
Take a culinary adventure with one of gaming's most beloved franchises, reads the official product description on Simon & Schuster's website. With stunning photography and step-by-step instructions, this book gives you everything you need to create some of this game's most iconic dishes. So there you go. No longer does Warcraft have the monopoly on cookbooks. You can go get one for your weird Final Fantasy lifestyle.
Yeah, and I know that you're not like all that into anime or... I mean, like, you like Final Fantasy and stuff. I'm really happy, by the way, that
Final Fantasy is great. Nothing wrong with Final Fantasy. It's fine.
But if you ever play a Final Fantasy 15, there's this whole bit like where you can go cook, and the food in that game like looks real, and I get hungry. Like, thinking about it right now, my mouth is watering. It's stupid. But, you know, watching anime, like the way that they portray their food, and it's a freaking cartoon, but oh my God, it's beautiful.
Yeah, what is up with that? Like, why is Final Fantasy 15 food? I've seen it. The in-game food in Final Fantasy 15 is the best-looking food in video games.
Easily. Okay?
The best-looking food in MMOs, I'd probably give that to Elder Scrolls Online. Their food looks pretty good.
Yeah.
At least looks like the food you're meant to be eating. WoW food looks like four polygons of cheese.
I mean, yeah, that's true. The Final Fantasy 15 food looks like beautiful in the same way that like they used to... like rub Vaseline on the lens of a camera,
yeah,
you know, back in the, and everything looked all beautiful and like shiny. And you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what they need to do is make sure some of that stuff's in that book. Otherwise, who cares about MMO food? It's never been interesting to me.
And don't smear Vaseline in the food, please.
No. World of Warcraft, Wrath of the Lich King will be adapted into a pandemic board game. That's another little bit of side business this week. And that's an interesting take, because if you are a fan of pandemic system, game system, then you know that this... You'll know that this is perfect for that, because you're basically spreading or helping stop or spread. I'm not sure, actually, which side you're on, but you're either stopping or helping spread the freaking scourge, and the Stratholme business is in there, and Lich King's involved, and a bunch of your favorite characters in miniature form, and it's using the pandemic board game rules. So despite actually being at some point of our own real life pandemic, maybe you'll have some fun in board game form with more.
I remember playing Pandemic, like the original Pandemic, like right when this pandemic started, and I felt very kind of odd and cathartic to go out and fight that thing. And I really enjoyed that. And just being a big WoW nerd, I think that this is going to be great. I don't know. Are you going to get it?
Or? Yeah, probably. I think it seems like a perfect match, and I really like Pandemic, so...
Yeah,
it doesn't. Cool. It seems like a bit of a no-brainer. I'll probably wait for some reviews. Friend of the show, Dan Patrice, is a gigantic board game nerd, and he'll probably review the hell out of that before I have to make a decision. But seems like a perfect fit to me. So
totally,
we'll see how it goes.
Totally.
All right, we got a lot in this week's big topic. Some of you may be familiar with Amazon Games.
Such a weird thing to still say.
It is a weird thing to say. So Amazon has tried to dip their toe into the world of let's make some video games. And they've kind of failed miserably up to this point. The only two things they've done, one was based on their, what's the show about the cars? It was name of the car thing.
Amazon.
Old guys that are like into cars, the British guys. And then they moved to Amazon and changed the name. It's called Old Guys Drive a Car.
Oh, yeah, totally. I know I'm blanking, too.
Top Gear. Not Top Gear, but the Grand Tour. That's it. Jeez Louise. My Lord. All right, sorry. The Grand Tour is the thing I'm thinking of. They did a Grand Tour car thing that was abysmal garbage. No one knows about it because it was bad, okay? Then their second project was this third-person shooter thing. I forgot the name of it. It's like Osiris or Optimus or some name like that. Was on Steam for a hot minute. They yanked it back, gave people their money back, said they were going to keep working on it, but I think it's officially dead now. So that didn't go well. But all the while, they've been working on this MMO called New World. And I thought it might be time to talk about what the hell New World is and whether it's going to demand any of your time. So here's some of the basics. We have a release date of August 31st, 2021. That's not the first release date we've had. They've delayed a couple of times. But that looks solid. It's best as we can tell. No other reasons to delay the game at that point. And based on impressions from recent betas, it seems like they're kind of there. $39.99 for the base game. No subscription model for this, at least not now. Maybe there'll be like an ESO style plus membership or something. You get, you know, added benefits by doing that. But there's no indication of that up to this point. It's a $40 game. In theory, new expansions will cost you another $30 or $40, and you'll keep playing it. Think of it as like Destiny in terms of its model, its price model. The in-game shop will be there, though, so there will be a cash shop in there. Cosmetics, in-game items. They specifically originally had plans for, things like in-game XP boost, things like that. The community around, the potential community around this game kind of revolted and said, that's a terrible idea. And they have since removed that. So they're not going to do any game altering stuff in the shop, they say, at least now. Only cosmetics and junk like that. And if you're excited about checking out their mount selection, don't get too excited because there are no mounts. You have to run everywhere in this game.
It's just weird to me, man. I don't know why they wouldn't.
It's weird, but I mean, yes, it's weird. But also, I think mounts are not dangerous. There are two things you can look at a mount and say. Number one, a mount is obviously a huge boon to gameplay if you're trying to get around a lot. You know, I understand the desire to have a mount and have it early. But it changes gameplay, like it Fs with things. Totally. World of Warcraft has, you know, learned the hard way that flying mounts, as cool as they were when they were introduced in the Burning Crusade, have been a lot of you know, a lot of heavy weight on the game. Mm-hmm. And having to design around it and make it harder for people to get it. And it's just very controversial. And there are people I've heard at Blizzard say, yeah, we kind of regret adding flying to the game because now they got to jump through these hoops to justify when you can get flying and when you can't. This game will not feature even ground mounts, which reminds me, I think initially, and I don't know if they still do, but Guild Wars 2 didn't have mounts. At least at launch, they didn't.
Yeah, they ended up, there are mounts in there now, but
are there?
Okay. I think they're even flying mounts. I don't know. Somebody who plays Guild Wars 2 can chime in, but
yeah, I can't remember either. And you know, everything in Final Fantasy is a chocobo, either flies or it runs. Just do whatever you do. But yeah, that's it. To at least start things out, you're running a lot. And if that's okay with you, it's okay with me. It doesn't really bother me. 50 levels maximum in this game. It's all set on an island called Eternum. Or Eternum? Eternum?
Eternum.
Is it Eternum? Like Eternum.
Yeah.
Eternum.
That sounds right. We'll go
That's
with
fine.
It.
It's like Eternum, but with an A.
But Eternum.
Yeah. Broken up into 8 zones, so a bunch of space. The game was originally set to be more set in like a real life, like historic sort of, you know, think of New World, like, oh, we've discovered the American continent, and we're going to do all that, more of a survival-y kind of idea, but that has all evolved to be dark magic and fantasy setting and all of that, and that's what you're going to get. Even though some of these dudes look like conquistadors and it drives me nuts, I don't like it. It's not my
weird aesthetic.
It's not my aesthetic. Yeah, I don't like it. It's too historic. It feels like I'm in the wrong game. Doesn't feel fantasy enough, but some of the other faction gear and the things I've seen in the game make it, you know, they mix it up a little bit. Here's how they describe the place of Eternum itself. For thousands of years, the mysterious island of Eternum has been the source of fantastical legends. And now you've found it, shipwrecked, with no supplies or allies. You need to make your way to a dangerous world where the fundamental laws of life and death don't apply. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Magic flows through Aeternum. It brings life, miraculous healing, reanimation of the dead, and strange flora with magical properties. And it brings horror, the power to cause untold destruction and the slow wasting of the soul through the countless cycles of death and resurrection. In such a land, your destiny is whatever you make of it.
So deep. Like, yeah. Real deep. I like the setting, and I like everything that I'm seeing so far with the aesthetic. Other than the conquistador thing, the aesthetic is very different, I feel like, from most other MMOs that we're getting. It's almost like a little bit realistic mixed with some dark magic sort of feel.
Sure.
And before we jump into the gameplay, I kind of want to go back to one thing that you talked about that I think is really important here, and that's the in-game shop. You know, I think it's great that we don't have another MMO that is going to cost us X number of dollars a month.
Yeah.
I think that's really great.
Sure.
But the other thing is that Amazon did a really good job of listening. And I know that because I've been following this game for a little while, by the way. I'm very excited about it.
You pre-ordered it today, I heard. You went and grabbed it, right?
Yeah. Tried.
Sure.
And then I actually got it. I got it. It's there in my library, ready to install.
Yeah.
I just got to wait. But I'm interested in seeing more about what this game is going to be about. And I like seeing that a company like Amazon, who can be, you know, a gigantic behemoth, doesn't necessarily have to listen to anybody, but they decide to listen here and try to do what's right by their community. And when people say they don't want XP boosts and other kind of consumables like that in their in-game shop, where it could be construed as pay to win, and they listen to that, I think that that's great. And they've taken feedback in multiple cycles, just having followed this. And you mentioned it before, where it's like, yeah, they heard that the big survival game aspect of this game was reimagined, and they kind of followed a more traditional MMO route after tons of feedback. So seeing the trend of Amazon actually listening to the player base and that's been testing this over the past really several years.
Yeah.
It's really promising. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing more of this game and playing it in the closed beta.
Yeah. I'm legit excited. Given the changes, I was not interested at all when the game was announced as more of a survival, multiplayer PvEP experience. Like, that's not interesting to me. There's a million games like that. I'm kind of, I kind of don't want that. What I want is sprawling stuff I can play by myself, cool content I can play with friends, and the more traditional MMO experience, which is what they now say they're going to deliver us. Now, the big difference for a lot of players is going to be how it plays. And let's talk about that for a second. Gameplay is more like ESO, less like WoW. And by that, I mean World of Warcraft, Final Fantasy, Guild Wars. They are known to be your tab targeting kind of MMO, right? Tab a dude, target him, hit 1 through 5, whatever it is, do your rotation, you know, slowly beat the dude and then move on. That's your combat. This game is more active and action oriented. You are swinging your sword with your left mouse button. You are putting up your shield with your right mouse button, assuming you're using a shield. Similar stuff for staves and other kinds of weapons. It is more action oriented, lock onto your target and go fight him. Not like to the level of Dark Souls or something. They're not making that. But again, if you've had any time in ESO, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And this feels very much like that. And I've played enough ESO. It just, every time I see him fight in this game, I'm like, oh, that's just like ESO. Yeah, and I actually see that as a positive thing, because I think the ESO combat is pretty strong. I think it could use help in the animation department. And this game seems to do a lot of animation. Like, there's a lot of graphical coolness going on from what I can tell.
Yeah.
And I feel really strong about that moving forward, because what I don't want is another tab targeting MMO. There are plenty of those, you know, I can play those anytime I want. I need something a little more, I don't know, maybe a little more visceral. This appears to be that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, how do you feel about the skill shot piece of all this? Because in this game, you know, you can kind of, if you're wielding a bow, for instance, you can pop around corners and shoot people. Do you feel like that is something that you're going to enjoy, or are you going to be more of like a melee kind of up in your face sort of deal? Like, what are you thinking?
I mean, it's just them adding like a timing mechanism really to it. You know, like, I'm fine with that. I don't have a problem with that. I can tell you this right now, watching these guys pull their bows back and get in like kind of a zoom mode annoys me. I don't want that. Like, just let me pull my bow back. Like, let me turn that off in the options. And if it isn't there at launch, it will be, I promise you, because
yeah,
I don't want to have, like, it's so tempting in these games to insert a bunch of cinematic type movement, but that will eventually wear off and you'll just be annoyed by it because you're just trying to play. So a few things in there, I can't quite tell. The skill system itself, though, like the actual progression of your skills and stuff, it feels like old school RuneScape or something.
Yeah,
like, totally. There are no classes in this game. It is basically, hey, you want to level up really great spear work, go for it. And you want to have some magic on top of that? Awesome. Up till level 20, you can respec any time for free. So there's plenty of room there to just test and play and mess around. And even after that, it's just gold. But I like a game where I'm not in a hole. I can make decisions and change my mind, you know, and go a very different direction if I want to, and experiment before I lock myself in. Most MMOs are like, hey, you want to be a mage? Good. Hey, I hope you like magic, because you're going to get a lot of magic with this guy. You know, like, this will let you kind of create hybrids that are battle magey and, you know, just weird combinations of stuff, which is pretty cool. I do like that a lot.
Yeah.
I will say, graphically, I'm very impressed.
Me too.
This doesn't look like your typical MMO. The closest to this, I would say, this is like the lushness of, like high resolution WoW lush. So if you could, you know, that kind of wonder that Warcraft has in it when you first discover new zones and the color and the, you know, all that. So WoW's always been really great at that, but it's also been super stylized. This is like a not hyper realistic version of that, but a much more, you know, it's high fidelity kind of quality to that lushness. And I'm super into that. But it also, I keep bringing up ESO, but I think it's a good comparison. It's got a little bit of this sort of ESO, you know, not quite real, but more real than you're used to. It doesn't feel like a big flat MMO. MMOs tend to have giant hallways and huge textures and, you know, big blocky stuff because it's an MMO. That's how things work. This just got a lot of detail in it. And that bodes well for me and my interest.
Yeah, it feels like a really dynamic world from all the visuals that I've seen, which is like, it just Like, yeah, like this is a great scene. If people are watching live on Twitch, you can see, like, you go from lush landscape down into this like blood, like swampy thing.
Yeah.
And that is very cool. Like, as a consumer, like just as somebody who really likes visuals in games, like that's a cool experience. And like watching some of the combat and stuff, talking about that again really quickly, like it'll be really interesting for a lot of the folks who come from a game like World of Warcraft or Final Fantasy 14 and Guild Wars 2, where it's tab target. You don't necessarily have those skill shots. Like if you remember Wildstar, like I've seen some of that in chat, like Wildstar is I love that game.
That game was great, dude. They didn't give it the chance it needed. It was so cool.
Oh God, that was so good. So that was such a fun like playstyle where it was kind of tab targety, but then you can get those really clutch like skill shotty sort of things where you would land in a certain area to cause some kind of a massive effect or shoot a straight line in front of you and it would do a thing. Like that was really, really fun. I played one of those like dual pistol wieldy dudes. I forgot what they were called, spellslingers or something.
Yeah, something like that. I love those guys.
But it was gratifying combat where I feel like you're going to get some of that in this, but it's going to be difficult for those folks who have trouble with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There's going to be people who would really, I guarantee you there are people who won't play ESO for the same reason right now. They don't want to play an action version of this stuff. They want to play, you know, they want to tab and target. And I get it.
Right.
There's something chill about that. It's part of the reason that WoW you can play WoW and do stuff and WoW and have TV on. You know what I mean?
Like
it's a very casual kind of experience. Maybe you're supposed to focus more when you raid, but you know, not so much when you're just playing it to do your dailies or whatever. And this game is going to engage you more. That may, you know, your mileage may vary. They're now showing basically post tutorial moment here where he's running around on the beach with a bunch of other new players.
And so those trees falling in the background.
Yeah. I don't know what that's about. That's kind of freaky.
That's the crafting, baby. I can't wait to craft.
That's the other thing. Major crafting in this game.
Yeah,
which we'll get to here in a second. So, all right. So here's a couple other things. You're meant to compete for territories over a period of time. So that's a big part of the multiplayer effort, leveling up other characters in the process. The players earn more experience and master more weapons, and they'll do more to overcome different challenges of Aterium or
Aterium.
Aeternum.
Aeternum. That's what it was.
Man, that's going to take me a while. Gosh dang it. Some of it requires you to team up with friends. We'll talk about expeditions in a minute. They're basically dungeon delves, that sort of thing. All right. So you can join guilds, or as they're known in this world, companies, which is a very historical way to use the name. Sometimes I feel like this thing is alternate history with fantasy in it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Just some of the terms. I mean, the name of the game itself, like, I don't know. It's kind of weird. This allows you to develop chunks of the landscape into big towns. Through this process, players will be able to purchase houses, which act as fast travel points. Beware, settlements can be attacked by rival companies. So you're always got that kind of defend and attack kind of thing going on. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that goes. That stuff usually, my experience in past MMOs is that stuff sounds amazing on paper whenever they talk about those kinds of features. And then in the game, it's never as cool as you think it is.
Warhammer Online.
Yeah, Warhammer's a good example. There was one a long time ago, like pre-WoW, maybe post-Dark Age of Camelot. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh.
Someone in the chat will remember, probably.
Yeah.
But they had, like, that. This was their whole idea. Like, big, huge landscapes where you could build up giant cities, defend them, attack them. And it sounded so rad. And they were, like, ex-EverQuest people working on it or something. Not Zork, chat room. And it just sucked. It was not good. It was poop. So,
it'll be interesting. I mean, if they can pull it off, I remember big siege battles in games like Lineage 2, one of the first MMOs that like I really dug my teeth into. Mm-hmm. And those siege battles, when my like really crappy computer could handle it, would be really, really fun. And it was rewarding, but it soon became very clear who like the winners were on that server, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how they balance that.
They need to pull this off. Cause if Amazon Studios wants to, they need to have one of their first three projects work, or else what are you even doing? Like,
yeah,
get out of games development or hire better. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I do have high hopes for it. There's some really smart people on the team. If you do a little background check on, not background check, but you know, look and see who's involved. A lot of really talented people with a long, long list of experience. Like, they have the know-how. They certainly have the money. Now it's just a matter of executing, and I hope they hit all their notes. That would be cool. Yeah. Mentioned the respeccing up to 20. Also, there's these countless expeditions, they're calling them. I'm sure you could count them, but they say they're countless. The experience in the world. These are quests that will provide unique bits of gear like armor and weapons and stuff for you and your friends. Some of that is group content. Some is solo. And there's a story, a huge story arc, but they're not every level. So, you know, there'll be a chunk of time where you're just doing a lot of side stuff before you unlock the next big piece of story content. Not that different than other games in its
like
class.
Like Renown in WoW, like that campaign.
Yeah, or the another good example. ESO has their kind of overarching thing, and you talking to certain people only happens every few levels. And if you forget to go do it and you do a bunch of other stuff, then you can go do it in rapid succession. Maybe this will be part of that. I don't know. They don't get into whether the world, this is one thing nothing ever says. I can't find this anywhere. If the world scales with you or not, that's how they do it in Guild Wars and, parts of WoW, and like the leveling experience, there's scaling.
ESO does it too.
ESO's their Tamriel Unlimited is entirely that. And, I really like it, but I think it has to be handled just right to make it work. Anyway, they don't say here. We don't know. There may be zones where you're like, oh shit, I can't go in there. That's level 60 and I'm only level 10. I'll die. You know, we don't know because they haven't said. We'll see. Hey, you guys, let's talk about getting your pills faster and easier. You got prescriptions. Your doctor's like, hey, you got to take this. Everybody has this to deal with, right? Well, Amazon Pharmacy is going to make that easier for you. They make it way easy to order prescriptions and have them delivered straight to your door. And the process is pretty simple. It saves you a lot of time and money and hassle. No more waiting in line at the pharmacy. That's a big one. You have the option to choose between 30 and 90 day supplies. And if you're a Prime member, you can get 6 months worth of prescription medication. So that's cool. That's double the 90. I know math. Plus, you can quickly and easily compare prices and, I don't know, you can do all this without insurance. Prime members can get their meds as low as $1 a month when paying without insurance. So, just have your doctor's office send you a next prescription straight to the Amazon pharmacy. Right now, they do it to, like a store or something. Have a go there, and then you will receive it delivered straight to your door. Amazon Prime, pharmacy, rather, works with most insurance plans nationwide as well. I can't think of an easier way to get this stuff. I have a couple of meds I have to do. And why not do it faster and easier with Amazon? I'm a Prime member. Why not? Let's just do this. So, Amazon Prime members can save on prescription medication when not using insurance with medication as low as $1 a month, plus free two-day delivery. Learn more at amazon.com/wowrx. That's amazon.com/wowrx for more. Like we mentioned earlier, no classes, so the mastery system and the weapon system, you know, they're still going to be min-maxing because people, that's what you do, you know. Someone will say, oh, the best combo is this sword plus this thing plus that, and make sure you put points into blah, blah, blah. I mean, you're going to have those guides, and people are going to try to push you down those roads, but the idea here is it's a much more open-faced sandwich of game. And you can go in.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the boat where I kind of know what I want to do, and I'm not going to let anybody tell me, but we'll see how long that lasts.
I want to do magey shit with, like, ice. I want to fire ice out of stuff. That's what I want.
I want to do that bow thing that you hate. I want to sit there and snipe people. And then maybe without a freaking sword or something.
Well, look, the multiplayer, that's what you should do. You should hide in bushes. You should be a dirty camper. And you should snipe people from far away.
Absolutely. The dirtiest of campers.
Dirty campers.
Very stinky. Mm.
Oh, yeah. Great. Watch out for the dirty campers. All right. Moving on. Here are the weapons in the game currently. And the reason this list is significant or important is because the weapons are kind of everything. Think of it as Destiny weapons, the guns in Destiny. The whole goal is to get that cool one you want. And they've got the whole, you know, gray up through purple kind of color scheme and all that for rarity and affixes and all of that. But this isn't Diablo where... if you use a certain axe and hit the ground, every time you hit the ground, it's going to create a giant hole or something or a crater. It's more like passive stuff that'll, you know, increase your global cooldown speeds or, you know, things like that. But here are the weapons. Warhammer, great axe, The entire Warhammer universe is in this game. No, it's just the weapon, the Warhammer weapon. The Great Axe, Life Staff, which I assume is healing related, Fire Staff, Sword, Rapier, Hatchet, Bow. Oh, man, who has hatchets? That's cool. Bow, Musket, Ice Gauntlet. Hello. Hello.
That I saw that was like, wait, what? That's like totally up your alley, dude.
Yeah, dude. Give me two. Can I wear two? Let me have
two. No, they don't have dual wielding yet, which was one thing.
Yeah, they don't have that yet, but they will. Yeah. And a shield. And they go pretty deep in the game with things like, you have a certain kind of dodge. Oh, that's the thing I should mention. The game shares some of ESO's other design sensibilities with stamina. So, and that's not unlike a lot of Elder Scrolls content. So, like, if you roll, you're going to use a bunch of stamina. If you're carrying a shield, you weigh more. You're a big, heavier dude. You're going to have less stamina for the roll, but you're going to have more survivability for hits. Think of it that way. There's a lot of give and take on those systems, but the whole thing is, you know, you can't just go in hacking away and expect to just spam your way to Nirvana. You got to like fight smart.
Yeah. And when it comes to the fighting, actually, like see some comments about open world PvP, like that's actually completely optional for folks. So like,
oh, yeah, it didn't used to be that the goal of the game in the original state was PvP all the time. And players were like, we don't want that. And they said, okay, well then how about we not do that? And then others were like, well, wait, we want PvP. And they said, well, all right, how about we just make a damn MMO where PvP is optional and you have to toggle it on or off. And if you want to get ganked, fine, you can be that guy. It's like war mode and WoW.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense to me that they would do
totally.
That.
Totally. So it feels like this is a game for anybody who wants any sort of occasion of whatever you like to experience in an MMO. It kind of gives you all that.
Yeah. And I just watched him chop some trees down with his fighting sword. That's cool.
Yeah.
so those elements are there, and that's the part I wanted to get to next, which is crafting. Huge part of this game is the crafting system. And everybody can kind of do everything. That is also very ESO-like. Expeditions will drop you crafting materials, so that's important. Those are vital to your progression. The game's crafting system is pretty comprehensive. And we have a list of the skills that you can master. Weaponsmithing, armoring, jewel crafting, engineering, lodging, harvesting, smelting. Harvesting? Am I going to farm? Oh, you're going to
farm all that green.
I'm going to farm.
All that green.
I like farming. Smelting, stone cutting. Who keeps the metric system down? We do. Remember the stone cutters? Was that their names on The Simpsons? Hold on. Am I remembering that wrong?
Who Dude, I have the, no, I like The Simpsons, but I have no idea.
It's such a classic episode. I think it's the Stonecutters. Anyway, stone cutting, wood cutting, leather working, and weaving, which is you create Hugo weaving over and over. It's fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, nothing skill. To do with clothes.
Yeah, yeah. That's fine. Well, it is Stonecutters. Thank you, chat. I was confirmation right. Incoming. There you go. Anyway, if I was to label this game, I would say this game feels a lot like Fantasy Destiny. And I don't mean any of the negative things about whatever you may have in your head about Destiny, whether you played a lot of Destiny or not. Something about this game says that to me. And I don't know why. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I just get that vibe.
Well, the third person feel gives me a lot more ESO vibes kind of coming into it. I actually preferred to play ESO third person. Were you one of those that like to do it first person or?
I mean, in ESO, I go back and forth.
Were you? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same with like actual Elder Scrolls. By the time we got around to Skyrim, that was never great. Like their third person in Skyrim was okay compared to previous Elder Scrolls games. But if you've ever tried to do that in like Oblivion, it was nightmarish.
Terrible.
The swapping between the two in ESO is actually very good. And I hope they learn from that for whatever six ends up being, because it's very good. Like right now, ESO is basically a very good multiplayer Elder Scrolls experience. Like I quite like it. And
yeah,
it gives me all the things I like about Elder Scrolls. And one of those is proper first and third person functionality. So yes, I do like that. I don't know what you're going to be able to do here though. No one ever shows it in first person. So
yeah, I mean, so the third person feel I think is good for me. I think the over the shoulder bit is always just like a little awkward to get used to, and where your character is actually in positioned in like in the world versus your perspective. I've always found that like a little weird with video games that are third person, but I think that like overall I'm looking forward to, you know, kind of jumping in there, trying the combat and like really playing around with all the different, like, cause this gets me excited on all sorts of fronts.
Yeah. And I can't believe I'm excited about it, cause I didn't think I was going to be, but I am. I actually really want to try it. Also, low barrier to entry. There's the initial cost of the game, sure, but that's it.
Yeah.
Just go play
freaking
it.
Freaking $40.
Now, here's the important thing, though. They've got to nail the part I'm about to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is, they have to nail this game on week one. And I say week, not day, because, you know, you always have stuff on day one. It's okay. I think we can live with some of those things. That part's never easy. But the first week or so, week or two maybe, if your game is not really compelling, fun, and up for most of the time, people will move past and go somewhere else. That's how this stuff works. And, you know, as much credit as you can give World of Warcraft for being the dominant form of this for so long, one of the things nobody ever seems to talk about as one of the great things WoW did was launched in really great shape. Were there queues? Yes. Were there some problems? Yes, there always is. But for the most part, the game released in a really quality state and played great immediately, and let you know right away what was good about the game and compelled you to move forward and play it. That is not, it's apparently not easy, because no one else seems to be able to do this at launch. As much as everyone's chased Warcraft money for all those years, the one thing they never seem to get right is making everything great out the door. I think Guild Wars 2 did pretty good out the door. That's a good example of one that maybe did all right. And there was a considerable amount of hype around that game when it came out. So, you know, but ESO was a flop out of the door. They fixed stuff, yeah, and that's great. I'm glad they stuck with it, because it's one of my favorites now. But it was a rough launch. Yeah. Star Wars, rough launch. What's another one? I can't think of any more.
Final Fantasy,
a horrible launch. It was terrible.
Awful.
It was terrible. Awful. Everybody right now can't stop talking about 14, but I'm like, do you remember the state of that thing when they started? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And the devs were like, oh yeah, this thing's terrible. Hold on. Wipe the whole thing.
Start
it's
over.
Reborn.
Yeah.
And now we've got the wonderful game that it is. And I think that that's a good testament also to, like, when you have a fan base that's so, like, dedicated, but yeah, not everyone's afforded that. And I would say, wow, if they started out a little bit rough, they probably would have recovered given that, like, that fan base. Cause I remember when World of Warcraft came out, I was like, oh wait, you're telling me that I could play one of these soldiers that I love in my favorite RTS series. Like, yeah. Okay. I'm going to stick with it no matter how long it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
This game doesn't have that.
No, yeah, it doesn't have that yet. And it has to nail it pretty early, or else they're in trouble. So I want to see how they do there. No sub means they can capture people that normally wouldn't leave their current MMO that they do pay for to play. I think people will take a break and go check this out. I expect a lot of streamers to pick it up very early. I expect, again, though, like, this, what a double-edged sword. Like, streamers playing it and having streaming crowds in the tune of 200,000 people watching a live stream, immensely beneficial to your game. Mm-hmm. Unless it's a janky pile of poopy on day one. And then, yep, you got all kinds of problems. That's why, you know, some companies get accused of running private special servers for streamers, because they just want to ensure that nothing breaks. I kind of don't blame them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you want to put, like, your best foot forward.
You could mitigate and show your... This is the thing. Like, you show your best products so that then you can get more money through pre-orders, so then you can throw more money at the problems to fix them. Yeah. I get it, but still.
Now, here's what's funny. Most of the gameplay video I've seen on YouTube kind of cracks me up, because 90% of it is people sitting in camp making stuff. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So the game has this one little risk, and I just want to throw this out there. If the game becomes an incredible crafting game, but nothing else is as compelling as their crafting system, that's not good either.
No, but I'm going to love it though. I don't know. Like, I've never liked crafting in games, but for some reason, this is like, I'm like, oh my God, I kind of want to make everything.
I kind of do too. Yeah. And I don't like survival. Like I said, I'm not really a survival game guy. It's not really my jam, but this isn't that. This is crafting and survival elements thrown into a traditional MMO style experience. And, you know, they're going to get my $39. Is that what it is? 39?
Yeah. That's it.
See, that's almost, but not budget. That's like B tier price game. That's not even that expensive. Like, I feel like Amazon is trying to hedge their bets, come in at a low price, under promise, maybe over deliver, hopefully. And maybe this will be among the pantheon of MMOs people respect and like and play.
We'll find out.
Let's see how it sounds. Check this out. This is the menu music. Oh.
That gives me Ghost of Tsushima vibes.
Oh, a little bit, right? Yeah, a little bit of Asian influence, maybe. Okay, my favorite part's coming up. Let me skip over here. Here we go. Get a little drum in there. That's inspiring. It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go adventure.
Yeah, let's go adventure.
Let's go.
Yeah, and this guy at the top of the show is from this, you know, this guy here.
Tell me, have you witnessed their power?
Some kind of story bit at the top where he's talking to Conquistador Larry there with his dumb helmet.
Love it.
Yeah.
I love that.
Anyway, I just think there's potential here. We'll keep our eye on it, talk about it on the show when it comes out, and we'll let you know what we think. Let us know what you think.
Are you going to, have you already decided your faction?
No. Oh, that's the other thing. The Marauders, the Syndicate, and the Covenant are your three factions, and you choose them. You're not born into them. You choose them at level 10 or something.
10. Yeah, it's level 10. Like, Marauders are like war fighting people. Syndicate are like spy deception people. Covenant are like religious zealots.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I feel like I want to go. Which is the one with the plague doctor looking dudes?
That looks like maybe Syndicate. I feel like more. I was expecting you to go more Marauder because that was like they kind of had that Mad Max sort of vibe, like shiny chrome sort of deal.
They
you know?
Do a little bit. The problem with those guys is they're also the ones that wear the dumb conquistador helmets. So,
never mind.
She's not into it. I'm sure the gear will be super diverse, and I'm not that worried about it. But the Syndicate, I just like sneaky, dirty business.
I do too.
So I want to be involved in that. I want whatever the opposite of my own real life, my boring real life is. That'd be great.
Yep.
All right. It's time for emails, everybody.
Mr. Johnson, I have questions.
Now, if you've got a question for the show or a comment about the game we just talked about or anything we talk about on the show or any of the changes that we're starting to implement or any of that stuff, let us know. theinstance@gmail.com, like ACF did. He wrote in and said, hey, I'm very happy to hear that you're keeping the show going. I've been a listener since Dignation. Oh my gosh, that was a long time ago. Used to listen to them way, way back, he says. Well, here's my question. I wanted to give some insight into NDAs. Last week we talked about non-disclosure agreements and non-competes and how that affects Blizzard and other companies in the games market, and is it different than the regular world and that sort of thing. But anyway, he says, I want to talk about NDAs and joining founding companies. A lot of NDAs are often too broad by their very nature. For instance, my co-founder and I had a one-year window before we could technically be allowed to start a business. That's caused by a fear of risk when we were young and trying to look for funding. The way it was explained to me, most, if not all NDAs, at least if you're not an executive, but more on that in a second, he says, covers IP or intellectual property or info that would cause a conflict, i.e. customer lists. So think of it as like you're a sales guy at a plumbing company and you got a giant list of everybody who buys from you. If you leave and take that list, you're taking potential business from the place you're leaving. So that's a great example that he's using there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it says now executives are thought to have fault knowledge. Okay. That is to say they can never act in a way that doesn't violate no IP. I think that he means AIP. As they are the IP for games, if they aren't bringing plot, engine, or assets, it doesn't matter. Also, most NDAs are unenforceable age, or going out of style. I think he wrote this with his phone and maybe dictated it.
Yeah, I see what he's trying to say. He's trying to say what he means. Like a lot of the older ones.
Yeah, he says I hope at least that this is a little helpful with all the questions you're getting about the NDAs and such on the show. Keep up the great work, ACF. Well, thanks for the insight. I've also talked to a few people offline about the nature of this stuff. And since I know a couple of Blizzard people in particular who had year-long non-competes / non-anything. They couldn't do anything, like even making an announcement. And I'm pretty sure that worked on an executive level at some point for Morhaime, because Morhaime took a year to say anything about Dreamhaven. And you know he wasn't just sitting around. Same thing goes for Rob Pardo when he left and went and started Bonfire, which may never make a game. I'm just telling you, dude, those guys just sitting over there. What are they even doing? Just breathing? Is that all they do?
Need something. We need some news.
Anything. Like just anything. Say, hey, we're working on a game that has a sword in it. Okay. That's all you got to tell us. Or are you working on a game, period? That'd be cool. But right
concept
now,
art,
we don't know.
Something.
Oh, I just watched this video is still playing back here of this, of the bow class stuff, the bow weapon stuff.
I'm into it. I know you don't like the zoom in thing. I'm okay with it.
I don't like the zoom, but I like the bow. The bow's good. Look at
I'm
this.
Also all about that rifle, that musket. Or they're talking about making pistols and maybe dual wielding some pistols, going some cowboy action. Yeah, dude. That?
Guy dropped a supply cache, found a better weapon. All right. I might really be into this when it comes out.
Me too.
Anyway, if you have thoughts, feelings, comments, whatever they may be, send us your emails, theinstance@gmail.com. Garrett's out of town for one more week. That means next Friday, we'll have another guest host. That'll be John Jagger joining me from the Core Podcast. He is completely 100% all in, immersed in Final Fantasy 14. And he's going to try to sell us on why that is. Why the swing from all these, especially in the case of WoW, why all these players? Why are they just up and leaving and going to play Final Fantasy? An 8-year-old game, a kind of an old game in its own right. What are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? What are they doing at all? We'll find out next week with a deep dive with John Jagger. So look forward to that episode. In the meantime, Alex Albisu, thank you so much for hanging out with me today, man. It was awesome.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me. I was telling people like when they were asking me about the show, I was like, yeah, this is the very first podcast I ever listened to.
Whoa. That's and now, you know what, Garrett, same thing. His first show he ever listened to. That's nuts.
Yeah. Garrett and I have way too much in common. It's kind of funny. We've never met. And then here I am. So that's fun. That's
really
circle.
Cool. I'm glad we could you could finally come and see how we treat the pigs before we kill them and serve them up.
About to say the sausage is gross.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
I'm just telling you, it's pretty gross.
Pretty gross. Well, tell people where they can find more of your stuff. You got a few podcasts going. Where can they get it?
Yeah. So, you know, people out there probably hear me on America's Next Top Podcast or doing the exit interviews and everything. I actually do another show where I interview dads and parenting experts. So any parents out there, head over to thedadchronicle.com. I've interviewed a bunch of folks, even Scott and a bunch of others here on Frog Pants and others. So head over there. You can get a bunch of different resources around parenting. I even created my very first free ebook all around new parenting guidance for dads. And it's a checklist. It's awesome for dads to use as they find out that they're going to be a dad. So that's really fun. Yeah. And then I also do my own video game podcast. I don't know if you could tell, I'm pretty passionate about video games. If you head over to joystickandmouse.com, Joystick and Mouse is a podcast all dedicated to delivering video game news from the perspective of a few filthy casuals who enjoy talking about the gaming that we try to do with our busy lives going on.
Well, you are filthy casuals, so, you know.
I'm pretty filthy and I'm a casual. So, yeah I feel like that was fair. So, joystickandmouse.com. Shout out to my co-host, Diddy, does games in the chat there from ANTP Season 2.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Look at all these ANTPers hananging out and doing cool content. It's pretty rad.
It's fun. Yeah, man.
Well, it was awesome having you on, and we'll look forward to a future where perhaps you guest host again. And at the very least, we might see each other's, you know, stiff, unanimated faces in a little video game called New World coming up. So
absolutely,
let's see how that goes. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening and watching. We'll be back next week with more. Like I said, John Jagger joining me next week as co-host. Garrett will be back after that. And more coming down the pipe. For the meantime, head on over to theinstance.net. You can find ways to support us there. You can find all our information, other shows, all that kind of stuff, our Twitter accounts, and don't forget that email address, theinstance@gmail.com. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Alex, and for the vacationing Garrett. We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.